Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're stepping into a space that might sound, well, a bit surprising. Picture this. It's the end of a conference, late Saturday. What's the usual vibe?
Right. Often it's that sort of sharp edge, maybe some tension, people rushing off.
Exactly. Hurried goodbyes, maybe some awkwardness.
Yeah.
But this closing circle, it was different. No rush. People spoke. Yeah, but it was soft.
Tender, relational. That's how Ihan Allman describes it.
Just gentle presence, maybe even unguarded. Pretty unusual, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. And how they arrived at that feeling, that's really what we're diving into today. Our source is a fantastic blog post by Ihan Allman called I'm Opting Out.
Right.
It details their experience at a UKAGP conference focused specifically on neurodiversity.
Okay, let's unpack this then, because it sounds like a really personal story, but it seems to get right to the heart of what real inclusion looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, why it matters to all of us, you know, whether you identify as neurodivergent or not. So our mission here isn't just a conference recap. We want to pull out the big insights about communication, belonging, and how making spaces truly inclusive actually helps everyone.
It's about finding those universal takeaways from a very specific personal journey.
Okay, so let's rewind a bit. Before that closing circle, Ihan gets invited to present at this conference.
Right, them and their colleague Cam. They decided to do a workshop on the double empathy problem.
Which, just quickly, is the idea that communication issues between autistic and non-autistic people aren't just a one-way street. It's kind of a mutual difficulty.
Exactly. That's a really key concept. And their plan was for the workshop to be, you know, experiential, maybe a little nerdy.
Huh, nothing wrong with nerdy.
Definitely not. But crucially, they wanted to be mindful of autonomy.
Yeah.
You know, for people who might struggle to engage or just prefer to hang back.
So building in that opt-out idea right from the planning stage.
Precisely.
And, you know, leading up to it, the usual conference prep chaos, meetings, ideas, blurbs.
All the emails. Ihan mentions the emails, lots of them.
So many emails. Anyone who's planned anything knows that feeling.
Yeah.
You could build a small fort out of conference emails.
Totally relatable. So the day comes, conference is sold out. Ihan sees familiar faces, friends, colleagues, even former trainers.
But still felt anxious. That's pretty normal, I guess.
Very human, yeah. Even with familiar faces around.
So one of the first things Ihan attended was a workshop on dyslexia. And what stood out wasn't just what was said, but how.
Right. It wasn't just explained. It was felt.
Mm-hmm.
Ihan talks about feeling seen, grateful, but also, interestingly, a sense of grief.
Grief. That's powerful. What do you think is going on there when an experience hits harder than just, like, information?
Well, I think when something is embodied, when you feel it rather than just process it intellectually, it kind of bypasses our usual defenses.
Mm-hmm.
For something like neurodiversity, where lived experience is so central, feeling seen can be incredibly validating.
Mm.
But it can also bring up grief for times when that understanding wasn't there.
Okay. Like acknowledging a past lack.
Exactly. It's that deep resonance that simple facts might not trigger.
And this is where that opting out idea really starts showing up in practice, right? Ihan Henschen's dipping in and out during breaks.
Yeah, even missing things they wanted to see. They explicitly say, opted out as much as I needed. That's how I stay.
That's how I stay. That's key. It's not about leaving entirely. It's about managing presence.
And what's fascinating is how that deliberate option to opt out, that autonomy, seemed to create the conditions for more genuine engagement later.
It's counterintuitive, isn't it? We usually think presence means being there constantly.
Right. But this suggests true presence might actually need the freedom not to be present sometimes.
Yeah.
It allows for more sustainable, authentic kind of connection.
Okay, so then comes our own workshop. After lunch, Ihan mentions the panic hit.
Ah, yes, the pre-presentation jitters, even for experienced folks.
Totally. Deep breaths, final prep, and then they start. Introductions, explaining double empathy, why it matters.
Showing examples, asking big questions. Mm. And the response sounds like it was really intense.
Yeah. Ihan describes vulnerability, tears, receptiveness, openness, genuine curiosity, maybe even some frustration, but mostly.
Tenderness, softness.
Back to those words from the closing circle. It sounds like the workshop itself created that kind of space.
It really seems like it laid the groundwork.
Mm.
Experiential exercises, more questions, and then session done.
Leading eventually to that unique closing circle. It really sets the scene for the lessons learned.
Absolutely.
So what are the big takeaways? Ihan distilled five main points from this whole experience, and these feel really universal.
They do. Let's dig in. The first one is kind of a play on the title. Opting out, not an option, meaning when it's not offered.
Right. The point being, when adjustments like being able to step away are offered, it's not just for neurodivergent people or people with disabilities. Everyone benefits.
Exactly. That pressure to just stay put, to participate when you feel like you need to leave, it helps nobody.
Think about it. How many times have you sat in a meeting or a social thing, just needing a minute, needing to recharge, but feeling like you had to stay?
All the time. That feeling is so draining. And it doesn't lead to better input, does it? It leads to burnout or just zoning out.
Yeah, you're physically there, but mentally, long gone.
So allowing people to opt out isn't about lowering expectations. It's about fostering genuine, sustainable engagement, designing for human energy levels.
Okay, that makes sense. What's the second takeaway?
Policy is distressing. IHN argues that ambiguous policies, the kind driven by opinion rather than research, create real problems.
Uh-huh.
And the people caught in the middle are left trying to bridge the gaps or make impossible compromises.
And they add that crucial note, this doesn't mean compromising on safeguarding.
Right. That's important. It's about clarity and evidence-based policy, not just gut feelings or personal convenience dictating rules that affect others.
How often do you think our systems create barriers just because they're built on shaky assumptions, not malice, but just outdated ideas?
Way too often. And the burden falls on those trying to navigate the confusing rules. It's inefficient. It's frustrating. It's a hidden cost of not designing policies inclusively from the start.
Okay, number three. This one feels really important. Burnout isn't always loud.
Yes, it can be quiet. Showing up as withdrawal or maybe even hyper-functioning. Silence.
And the danger is that quiet struggle, that hyper-focus can easily be misread.
As professionalism.
Right.
As dedication.
That's insidious, isn't it? Our work culture might actually reward the signs of quiet burnout.
It really can. We praise the person who never complains, who just gets stuff done, even if they're silently running on empty. We need to shift what professionalism looks like.
I remember seeing a colleague just plow through work, totally silent, and thinking they were just super focused. Later found out they were completely overwhelmed.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Recognizing those quieter signs is crucial for supporting ourselves and each other. It's about sustainable well-being, not just visible output.
Absolutely. Okay, takeaway number four builds on that opting out idea.
Yeah. You can leave and still belong.
Meaning stepping away for a bit doesn't equal disconnection.
Exactly. In fact, IHN suggests it can be the very thing that makes continued presence and belonging possible.
It's like preserving your energy for the group by taking a necessary break from the group.
Precisely. It reframes stepping away not as failure, but as strategic self-management. You're protecting your ability to contribute meaningfully when you are present.
I like that, protecting your contribution. And the fifth point feels like it ties it all together.
Autonomy is protection. This feels like the core message.
Allowing people choice in how and when they engage isn't just nice, it's actively protective.
Yes. Especially, as IHN notes, in professional settings that often reward conformity. Giving people that control, that autonomy, is a fundamental form of psychological safety.
So it's not just an accommodation for neurodivergent people. This idea of autonomy as protection, how does that become a blueprint for healthier engagement for absolutely everyone?
Well, think about it. If you feel safe enough to say, I need a break, or I need to engage differently right now, without penalty, you're less likely to build resentment.
True. You don't feel coerced.
Right. It fosters trust. It reduces that performative, always-on pressure. Presence becomes a genuine choice, not an obligation.
Mm-hmm.
It builds resilience into the system, not just demanding individuals be infinitely resilient.
That makes so much sense. Okay, so we've got the story. We've got these five really powerful lessons. What's the bigger picture? What systemic change is IHN pointing towards?
IHN is clear. Change is needed, obviously.
Mm.
But where to start? Their first point is huge. Autistic-led theories need to be the standard, not the exception.
Meaning the knowledge and frameworks developed within the autistic community should be central?
Exactly. They stress that these theories already exist. They're accessible. Resources are out there, like on the Thriving Autistic website. The issue isn't a lack of knowledge.
It's about who gets to set the tone, who holds the power.
Precisely. It's about elevating and centering that lived expertise. And connected to that is the need to end the expectation that autistic people constantly have to explain themselves, justify their presence, carry all that emotional labor.
Right. The burden of education shouldn't always fall on the marginalized group.
Absolutely not. And organizations have a responsibility here. IHN makes the point. Stop hiring people into systems you have no intention or power to let them reshape.
Oof. Yeah. That's setting people up for failure and frustration. It's like saying, we want your insights, but then locking the door to the room where decisions are made.
It's fundamentally unfair. And then there's the final, really nuanced point Ihan makes.
Which is?
That tenderness, structure, and safety aren't opposites.
Ah, that's beautiful. We often think of structure as rigid, maybe even harsh.
But Ihan says they need to be held together on purpose. That's the real work.
Yeah.
Intentionally designing spaces where clear boundaries and compassion and safety all coexist.
And it's not either.
No. And it is happening. Just not everywhere yet. It's about shifting the whole perspective, not just accommodating difference, but recognizing the value in it and structuring things so everyone can genuinely thrive.
Okay, so this is about real practical change. And Ihan offers some concrete steps and resources. A key message is diagnosis is an option, not a must-have. Self-awareness and adjustments matter most.
Exactly. So for listeners, whether you're exploring your own neurotype or want to create more inclusive spaces, here's some starting points Ihan suggests.
Okay.
First, there's the Neurodivergent Practitioners Directory you can join for free.
Good resource.
Also, check out Thriving Autistics monthly meetups. Tickets usually come out about 2 weeks before.
And crucially, read books written by neurodivergent people. Get those direct insights.
Definitely. And learn about specific concepts like monotropism, gestalt language processing, and how they connect. These offer valuable ways to understand different experiences.
Frameworks for understanding, yeah.
Find out more about practical workplace adjustments, too. And if a formal assessment is something someone's looking for, the Adult Autism Practice offers assessments and support, including for ADHD.
Great. So lots of actionable things there. This has been quite a journey today, hasn't it? From that really tender closing circle.
Right back at the start.
To these big universal ideas about autonomy, belonging, and how we build genuinely inclusive systems.
It really shows how a personal reflection can spark much broader insights. That core idea that letting people opt out can actually increase presence, it really challenges how we think about engagement.
It really does. So here's something for you, our listener, to think about as you go. If embracing that freedom to opt out, that protective autonomy, can lead to deeper connection, where in your own life might you be conforming more than you need to?
Just pushing through out of habit.
Yeah, or expectation. And what possibilities might open up for you and for the people around you if you intentionally tried to hold tenderness, structure, and safety together in the spaces you influence?
It's not just about how you show up, but how you allow others to show up too.
Exactly. Something to definitely mull over.